This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Iraq's prime minister suspended cabinet sessions, and supporters of cleric Muqtada al-Sadr storm the Republican palace shortly after he announces withdrawal from politics. Iran's president says a settlement of safeguards issues between Tehran and the UN nuclear agency is one of the conditions for reaching a deal on reviving the JCPOA. And Pakistani officials say a third of the country has gone underwater following monsoon floods that have killed more than 1,060 people so far. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Iraqi cleric Muqtada al-Sadr says that he is quitting politics and closing his institutions, a decision which could further heighten tensions amid months of political deadlock in the country.
I decided to withdraw from the political process so as not to be involved with the corrupt politicians, neither in this world nor the hereafter.
Sadr has slammed other Iraqi leaders for not heeding to his calls for reform. He did not elaborate on the closure of his offices, but he said that some of his cultural and religious institutions would remain open. The announcement has thrown the country into turmoil. Sadr's supporters have broken into the government headquarters in Baghdad, prompting suspension of cabinet sessions until further notice. Tear gas was fired and sounds of gunshots were also heard in the city. Two have been killed and 20 others injured in the clash as the army has imposed a curfew in the capital. Iraq has been without a government or head of state for months. Last parliamentary election saw an alliance led by Sadr winning most of the seats, but he failed to form a government. Also, Ebrahim Raisi, the Iranian president, has reiterated the country's demands in the talks aimed at reviving the 2015 deal known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action.
What have been raised are first assuring guarantees. Second, the verification of the sanctions removal in an objective and practical manner. Third, the removal of sanctions in a meaningful and sustainable way. And fourth, an end to what I call political accusations regarding safeguard issues.
Raisi said an agreement on the JCPOA revival hinges on the settlement of safeguards issues between Tehran and the International Atomic Energy Agency. Raisi also called the safeguards accusations against Iran baseless and politically motivated. The IAEA recently asked Iran to provide explanations for what it called traces of enriched uranium at some of its undeclared sites. Tehran has urged the agency to abandon such accusations that often come from Israeli regime. In his presser in Tehran, Raisi also asked to comment on Israel's recent threats that it won't be bound by the JCPOA revival agreement and will continue to do everything to prevent Iran from attaining nuclear capabilities. The Iranian president said that the regime can never hinder Iran's progress in the nuclear field.
The Zionist regime's threats against Iran have led to nowhere. The assassination of Iran's nuclear scientists was meant to stop Iran's progress in the nuclear field. But we were not stopped. Many acts of sabotage and seditions were aimed at stopping us, but we were not stopped. And no measure by the Zionist regime and the arrogant powers will stop Iran from its right to obtain nuclear energy.
Raisi said Iran will not allow Israel to take any measures against the country if the regime decides to do so. He said Israel has proved that it is too weak to protect itself, even from besieged Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Elsewhere in his remarks, Raisi said there is no plan for him to meet U.S. President Joe Biden when he visits the U.S. next month to attend the U.N. General Assembly. He said such a meeting is of no use for the Iranian government or the nation. Earlier, academic and political scientist Mahmoud Sadegh Tajar joined us from Qom. He told us that U.S. policies are made in Israel and not in Washington.
One thing everybody in the world knows is that it seems that the American policy is designed in Tel Aviv, not in Washington. That's why what they are planning. Every time Americans want to make peace and improve their relation with Iran, the Israelis are deciding otherwise. The beautiful thing is in Iran, the decision is made inside the country, but in America, the decision is made in Israel for Americans. As long as they will not decide independently. Remember with Trump several years ago, we had the agreement, but very unethically, immorally, they broke their agreement, and that's what has happened. Decision for Iranians to work on science has no limit, and we have to do our best. But as far as the nuclear cases is concerned, we have been always saying that we have no such a decision for bomb or like that. But unfortunately, it seems that the Americans cannot decide without Israeli permission. So that's the problem.
A third of Pakistan has gone underwater following rain-triggered floods that devastated the whole country last week. Pakistan's Minister for Climate Change says the flooding has created a crisis of, quote, unimaginable proportions. A huge relief operation is currently underway, with the government declaring a national emergency. The National Disaster Management Authority has reported over 1,100 monsoon flood-related deaths since June. Last week, historic rains devastated four main provinces, with Baluchistan being the hardest hit. Officials say the floods have destroyed more than 2 million acres of crops, thousands of kilometers of roads, and dozens of bridges. Over 33 million people have been affected. Officials say this year's floods are the worst on record. The government has appealed for international help to deal with the disaster. Afghan women's rights activists have opened a library in Kabul. The initiative aims to promote reading and provide an educational space for women who have been excluded from public life since the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan in August last year. Rahmatullah Bakhban reports.
Afghan women have been struggling for their rights under the Taliban rule. Recently, they have launched this cultural spot under the name of Women's Library. There are more than 2,000 books in this library. Women and girls can borrow books or enjoy reading them here. Meanwhile, the founders of the library say this place offers plenty more than just books.
Our aim for setting up this library is to provide teenage girls with a place to study, communicate, and receive an education. Our second goal is to provide a cultural spot for those women who have lost their jobs and have nothing to do. You know that today many Afghan women are literate and don't accept forced isolation at their homes.
Mitra Kakar, a student of 11th grade, was banned from attending her school when the Taliban took power in Afghanistan in August last year. She visits such places to study books, practice drawing, and hang out with friends.
It has been almost a year since we were left out of school. When the Taliban came to power, we were told not to attend our classes. Since then, I have been going through tough times, but I never quit receiving my education. I got an English class and started learning drawings. I also love books and libraries like this. I just hope our school reopens and I can make it to the university. I want to study fine arts.
This place is also becoming a stage for women to speak out. One of the women rights activists here told us that the Afghan women are facing a rollback on their rights since the Taliban's return to power.
If we look through history, Afghanistan has had many prominent, creative, and leading women in different arenas. But since we live under the Taliban rule, it looks like this chain is unfortunately being broken, with women being sidelined or disappearing from active social life. We will keep raising our voices and defend our rights. Neither Islam nor Afghan culture has barred women from getting an education or going to work.
Afghan women rights activists also call on the global community to take serious and practical steps for women rights in Afghanistan. They say that merely condemnations can't relieve their pain, but the international community needs to come forward to press the Taliban to change their stance and uphold the rights of women and girls. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The U.S. says it is accelerating production of high-mobility rocket systems, HIMARS, to supply them to Ukraine to help it fight with Russia. That is while Moscow has repeatedly warned that the arming of Ukraine adds fuel to the fire and prolongs the war. This is what we discussed in our news review program earlier. Let's take a listen.
It's news review time. The United States is accelerating production of high-mobility rocket systems, HIMARS, to supply them to Ukraine to help it fight Russia, and that according to senior Pentagon official. William LaPlante made the announcement after visiting Lockheed Martin, a key U.S. arms manufacturing company. He said Washington's goal is to help Ukraine defend itself against the Russian aggression. Lockheed Martin tweeted that it takes pride in delivering products that enable America's mission success. On Wednesday, President Joe Biden also announced that he is sending an additional $3 billion in military aid to Kyiv. The latest package pushes the total amount of military assistance Washington has offered to Kyiv since February to nearly $14 billion. Moscow has repeatedly warned that arming of Ukraine adds fuel to the fire and prolongs the war. To get some insight, let's invite a couple of guests. Barry Grossman is a political analyst. He's in Bali, Indonesia. Manuel Pasrai is president of Asia Institute in Seoul. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. So, Barry, adding fuel to the fire and prolonging the war, is this the goal that the U.S. is pursuing, as the Kremlin is claiming?
Well, I think it's been clear from the beginning the U.S. has a very big investment in keeping the conflict going in the Ukraine and accelerating the conflict. Right, all as part of its long-range strategy or tactic of isolating Russia. This is a war which the Ukraine cannot win. It's a bit like the mouse that roared. And while with military aid to the tune of countless billions from Atlantic world countries, it can slow the process of losing this conflict down, it can't win. And of course, the Atlantic world's man in Kyiv is completely opposed to any kind of a political resolution. Bearing in mind that when the failing Soviet Union, soon to be Russia, agreed to grant independence to the Ukraine, it did so on the basis of the Ukraine signing an agreement committing to being a neutral party. And of course, it's been anything but neutral in recent years as the U.S. agenda plays out, which first gave us the maiden protests and the civil unrest that followed, and eventually civic unrest throughout the eastern provinces where they're predominantly populated by ethnic Russians. So this particular president of Ukraine, apart from being corrupt, is very committed to pushing the U.S. agenda, which is to keep this conflict alive, this military conflict, at the expense of Ukrainians. I don't think short-range missiles are going to make a great deal of difference in terms of the eventual outcome of this war, even a great deal of tactical difference in the short term. Because whatever the Ukraine can do with U.S., British, and wider Atlantic world help, the Russians are more than capable of doing with their own armory.
Now, Emmanuel, U.S. Has so far, as I just mentioned, contributed $14 billion, okay, worth of military armament to Kyiv, and now they looks like that they're adamant to keep doing that. Okay, we see Lockheed Martin and other arms, people are in the arms business. They are making big bucks. No, right. The U.S. is benefiting from this, and especially arms manufacturers. What about European countries? Are they not losing? Look at the energy prices, cost of living in the U.K. and others.
Well, obviously, for the average person in Europe, or for that matter in the Ukraine, things are quite severe in terms of the impact, not just in energy, but in food prices. Ukraine itself is a major food producer. And in some ways, all these multinational corporations We're most interested, actually, in the food production in Ukraine. And the situation is not getting better. Europe is reaching a state it hasn't seen, really, in some ways, since the 1950s. And that's a global impact. In the Ukraine specifically, the impact has been devastating. And there, as you noted, there's no end in sight. And for all we can see, Lockheed Martin is gung-ho about increasing conflict, selling more weapons, and trying to engage Russia in what could potentially be a world war or a nuclear war.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Barry, how long would this conflict go on, in your opinion? Because, you know, sales of arms going on, and you said that Zelensky is doing what the U.S. Wants him to do, and that's a longer war. So at the end of the day, who will be the main loser?
Well, I think at the end of the day, and Europeans will be the losers. And I think it's very important to remember that a strong EU is something that is against U.S. interests. And that's been quite obvious for a long time, ever since the neocons decamped after the Bush Jr. Presidency and took up residence in Europe. The U.S. is heavily invested in seeing a weaker EU, because a strong EU comprising a population pretty much the same as the United States and a combined GDP that's not far off the United States basically makes Europe an almost equal player with the USA, and that's something that the U.S. cannot abide. So along with seeking to isolate Russia, probably the more achievable goal the Americans seem to have for themselves, that not many people want to talk about, is weakening Europe. And ultimately, it's the Ukraine that pays the price.
Okay, thank you so much for your comments. Barry Grossman in Indonesia and Emmanuel Pasraj in Seoul.
Ukraine says it has launched a, quote, de-occupation campaign to retake the southern region of Kherson from Russian troops. A local government official says Ukrainian forces had launched a powerful artillery attack on Russian positions in the area. Russia-installed officials say that the city of Novaya Kokhova in the Kherson region is evacuating civilians due to constant artillery attacks by Ukrainian forces. Russia rapidly captured swaths of Ukraine in the south near the Black Sea coast, including the city of Kherson, in the early phases of the war. In the north, a regional governor said that the Ukraine's second-largest city, Kharkiv, was hit with cluster munitions. No casualties were immediately reported, but in the east, Ukrainian military say that 8 civilians were killed when Russian forces shelled the Donetsk region. Moscow says it does not target civilians.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Economic divide.
Europe's energy crisis is far from over, but Europe has another big worry to deal with, and that is the upcoming winter, when it's predicted to be extremely cold. How will its citizens deal with not only a high energy cost, but energy rationing? The term heat or eat is no joke when it comes to the European state of affairs on top of inflation. Hi, I'm Kavit Halfway. Welcome to Economic Divide. In this program, we will take a look at Europe's energy crunch. High gas bills, one of the outcomes, Europe to ration energy, something that is now real. Tough winter is projected ahead. Next up, we will take a look at Europe's cost of living crisis. We've covered this before in this program, worth reviewing again when you take a look at things like high inflation and also low purchasing power as a result of high inflation, amongst other prices that is biting into the pocketbook of Europeans. And finally, EU politicians, what are they doing? Well, in essence, they are sacrificing their own citizens. They're not pushing for diplomacy when it comes to the Ukraine conflict, and as a result, an economic crisis has unfolded for them.
As the crisis between Russia and the West heats up, fears are growing in Europe of a gloomy winter. There are now concerns that Russia could turn the gas tap off to Europe. Prices are already high in Europe and the UK.
There is potentially a double parallel between Britain today and Britain in 1973, thereabouts, in that the inflation which took off in Britain in 1973 and stayed high for the rest of the decade was the first impulse towards inflation was a combination of domestic forces because of global energy crisis.
Households in Germany will have to pay almost 500 euros more a year for gas.
There is no relief for Europe and its citizens when it comes to their economic state of affairs. They simply can't keep up or do anything about their money losing its value at this point in time. And that is very evident when you take a look at some online posts on this matter. And then with winter coming, things are looking pretty bad for them. Our first online post, winter in Europe may be springtime for Putin. Taking a look at this entry, we go into the source, where it says winter in Europe may be springtime for Putin. Russia's energy war deploys high prices to promote social turmoil and to empower populist parties. Next up, Europe seems to be getting exactly what the U.S. thought Russia was getting, an economic squeeze so bad that it topples leaders. Ouch, that hurts. Then German and French electricity are at record highs of 532 euros per megawatt hour for Germany and 690 euros per megawatt hour for France. Europe on the verge of an energy crisis, and it will be a very cold winter for the region. And then finally, natural gas is being stored and demand is being curbed, but it's far too early to call an end to Europe's fears of a cold, dark winter plagued by blackouts. Now, welcome to Europe's Dark Cold Winter, Elements by Julian Lee. In which it says replenishing storage and reducing demand still may not be enough. So obviously all the online posts that we just reviewed show how bad Europe is going to do and their citizens come winter. Okay, let's bring in our guests for this segment of the Q&A. Our first guest is Malachi Steenson. He's a lawyer and political activist. Malachi Steenson, welcome to Economic Divide. Taking a look at Europeans, they are looking at a really tough winter ahead, of which then the news of gas rationing and energy rationing in particular is what they have announced. And this has actually gone into effect. The shortage in energy to have affected deeply, for example, the UK, where electric bills have tripled. When you take a look at rationing, that really has a shocking ring to it. And, of course, the immediate question is when that happens, how will that affect the economy of countries like Germany and the UK?
Well, I think if we look particularly at Ireland, we're seeing the very same thing, where we're seeing, you know, huge increases in both electricity, gas and oil prices. And I think that the oil companies and the utility companies are using the Ukrainian crisis in order to jack up prices to consumers and to increase profits. I mean, at one hand, they're telling us that the price of these commodities is increasing. Yet at the same time as they increase the price to consumers, their profits are going up by huge margins. So it seems to me there's a certain amount of price gouging in the whole business. I think that the West and the EU in particular are using the Ukrainian crisis in order to bring in further controls on population. I mean, again, if you look at Ireland, we're told we're going to have energy blackouts in the next, during the next winter. But at the same time, our economic policy is geared towards bringing in, for instance, more data centres, which are huge users of electricity in particular, huge users of water resources. And there's no reluctance to say, well, if we're going to be short of electricity and power, then we shouldn't be bringing in these big consumers.
Okay, let me introduce our next guest. Karel Veres Kent joins us. Karel is the VP of the French party by the name of Solidarity and Progress, or Progrès, as they say in French. Karel, welcome to Economic Divide. Europe is forecast to begin this winter with historically low amounts of diesel. And my focus on this question is diesel that powers large parts of the economy in European countries, used for cars, trucks, etc. Now, when you take a look at the way that this actually obviously is one of the components behind the way that the economy and its wheel turn, how will it be? How will this be supplied if the supplies of diesel are at their lowest this time of the year when it continued from the year 2008?
Well, on the gas situation, there are deals with Azerbaijan, Norway, and Algeria. On the oil, it's probably more complicated because there are all kinds of tricks which are being used by various countries to counter the sanctions. For example, India is buying a lot of Russian oil, which is very cheap with special discounts, like China also. But India eventually could sell it to other partners in other countries, which then in turn can sell it to the US and to Europe. So everything depends to what degree, you know, the police, the media police and the financial police of the institutions connected to the central banks, will they really impose their policies? But you're absolutely right that diesel is a very clean and cheap energy and efficient energy. And taking it down will only lower the productivity. And then lower productivity means increasing chances of recession, depression, and bankruptcy.
It's time now for our InfoNews section of the program, where we bring you news with an economic flavor from around the world. Our first item is something to do with kids, the cost of kids. That's right, that has made news, the price of parenthood in the age of inflation. Now, this particular one is for the U.S., where it costs at least $300,000 per kid to raise them. Now, what have they done to come up with that figure? They have factored in the cost of inflation, where it said that a child costs more than a pretty penny for the average American. That price used to be roughly around $200,000 to $250,000. So obviously there was a huge increase when it comes to the cost of kids and raising them. Next up, something that the EU doesn't want to hear about. It's EU bankruptcies from businesses. More EU firms are facing that bleak situation. According to Eurostat, the number of petitions for insolvency has grown for a fourth consecutive quarter. Bankruptcy declarations has increased by 2.2% in the April to June period for the year 2022, another blow to the European economy. And the next up, a piece of news that came out regarding Canada and Canadian worker abuse, where you have a fight that has ramped up to prevent Canadian companies from abusing these workers abroad. Canadian companies have been accused of being complicit in alleged rights abuses and environmental harms. Now, that obviously has to deal with companies that deal with minerals or resources of that nature. And our final look goes to Dubai and the inflation in there. Consumer prices there have rocketed to its highest after years of actual deflation. Maybe you didn't know, but just 3 years ago, Dubai was experiencing the sharpest deflation in the region, peaking at 3.9% annually in February of 2019. So it shows at this point how that has rebounded, it's gone the opposite way to towards inflation. Those were the topics we picked. Hope you liked them. If you have any particular piece of news that you'd like to share with us from where you are at, please do send them to us.
Listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Time now for an in-depth section of the program. The energy crisis in Europe is real. Many Europeans will not be able to afford their heating bill this winter. And that's going to have severe consequences, unintended ones, for European officials and their countries. Social unrest not that far off. Some have speculated that is what's going to happen. Well, let's take a look at some of the reasons why something like that may occur. Now, electricity prices for the year 2021, Spain and Portugal, 411% increase. I mean, that's a lot, isn't it, for countries to experience that much of an increase. Greece has experienced a 343% increase in their electricity wholesale prices. And also France, which comes in at 336%. A lot. And also, we're looking at other countries that maybe we didn't have time to put here. Last one here, Italy. This has come in at 318%. And this is directly coming from the European Commission in terms of the figures and the increase that you see over here. Now, as energy prices surge, while wages remain unchanged, or maybe just a slight increase, some are living from salary to salary based on what has occurred. And they're being forced to actually decide whether to spend their limited funds on keeping the lights on in their homes or filling the fridge. This is where the term heat or eat has become a catchword for Europeans. That's the stark reality that they're facing. All right, next, energy ministers. Well, they had to do something. They've reached a deal on an EU-wide reduction in gas, which is something they came up with, 15% across the board. They said this first phase will be voluntary based on coordination or fuel switching, temperature limits, and information campaigns. But we have to wait and see whether that can actually be a blanket application for all European countries. That's key over there. Next up, this is something that's really incredible. Now, they're facing an energy crisis, okay? So what they're going to do, they are actually announced that they're prepared to drive up the cost of everyone's heating bills. How is that going to happen? Well, they're going to secure their supply of natural gas for the upcoming winter. But according to the European Union officials, whatever the world market can pay for a tanker transporting a supercooled form of, like, fossil fuel across international waters, Europe will be willing to top it. That's right. So whatever price is out there, they said this formally, made the announcement, we're going to pay a higher price. So there you have it. You have the citizens of these countries that are going to pay higher for that. Let's bring back Malachi Stinson, who's a lawyer and political activist, to see what he thinks about this. Malachi Stinson, welcome back. The EU has agreed to ration gas. That's one of the things that it said it will do. But some countries obviously have put up a fight because every country has its own particular needs when it comes to energy. And, of course, these energy sanctions against Russia are biting their economies. How fragile is this unity against Russia, do you think, at this point, as the economies are tanking and people are suffering?
At the same time, we're telling people, because of climate change and the other the agenda that they're using there to control people, we're saying that you must switch to electric cars. And at the same time, we're telling people, well, you're going to have electrical shortages. You're not going to be able to charge your car. So you're going to be, just like they used COVID to ensure that people were brought under a communist-type control in their countries, where they were afraid to go out the doors, where they were told, you know, that Armageddon was coming and the world was about to end. We're told the same with climate change. And, you know, as Michael O'Leary, the CEO of Ryanair, said the other day, that these people are telling us, for instance, what the temperature would be in 100 years, and they can't tell us what next Tuesday's weather will be like. So it seems to me to be a whole agenda being pursued, which is not in the interest of the ordinary consumer, and it's not in the interest of the ordinary member of the public. It's a policy that's being pursued, on one hand, to create and move capital into fewer and fewer hands, and also at the same time to move power into this European federal state almost, and into the powers of unelected bureaucrats.
Okay, let's see what Karel Veresken thinks. He's the VP of the French party Solidarity and Progress, who rejoins us. Karel, welcome back. A month ago, we saw how Europe was facing an energy rationing scheme, which it says it's going to enact as the tough winter, which has been predicted is going to be tough, is looming. You're looking at the shortage that has really catapulted gas prices and energy prices into a whole nother level, like in the UK, where it's tripled. Germany is also affected very severely. What effects will this rationing, when it really goes into full-fledged execution, have on the economy of these countries?
Well, it's a fast trip to disaster, because it's there is an alignment of several planets which are predicting that this will lead us to total collapse. First of all, for the European economy, it means losing the market in Russia, which for some factors in some areas is very important. Secondly, we're losing the arrival of raw materials for the production. Three, the higher cost of energy, because we'll bring down productivity. The model of the reconstruction of Europe after the war is to have cheap energy and invest it in highly productive industry and agriculture. For example, people in Germany talk about the end of the German model, because they will not have the cheap energy to build machines they can export and sell for high prices. Then on top of this, we have the drought, which is slowing down our nuclear power plants, which cannot be cooled, notably in France, but also it is impacting transport, like the Danube and the Rhine River. The Rhine is now below 40 centimeters, which means a lot of shipping inland, waterways cannot really function.
The industrial Northwest Europe is likely to face diesel shortages this winter. Diesel power covers large parts of the economy. Diesel shortages, along with falling levels of heating oil, could further weaken the economy and to prompt more protests across the continent. Gas rationings and possible shutdowns could potentially trigger social unrest and dissatisfaction among the poorer sections of European societies. Strikes have already erupted in several countries, including the UK, Belgium, and Spain. Governments are aware that people are struggling, and they know that things will get worse in the coming months.
I think our problem now is a lack of knowledge. We don't have anybody around in politics who can remember what it was like with inflation. Certainly not in office, and indeed many of them not at all, because you know, this is quite a young generation of politicians we have up now. So I think there's a danger in possibly in the other direction. The people are slightly lost.
We have told you about Europe's energy problem, but perhaps no country in Europe is facing an energy crisis like Germany. Let us count the reason why. The scale of the problem for Germany is so big that this headline reads a doomsday scenario. According to Bloomberg, Germany is at a risk of deindustrialization. It states that soaring power prices may trigger an exodus of factories from the country. Prices for gas and electricity in Germany have reportedly more than doubled in the past 2 months. There's another point that is not covered when it comes to Germany, and that is how they have moved to green energy from a long time ago under a program called Energiewende. Energiewende gained legislative support in 2010, and Germany spent over 202 billion euros on renewable energy projects from 2013 to 2020. Since 2010, the share of German electricity generation that has come from solar and wind power has risen from 8% to 31%. Now Germany may reopen its coal plants that it had shut down. They have no choice in order to safeguard their economy and national security. Don't forget, coal is the dirtiest source of electricity. Nevertheless, Germany has told its citizens that they have to face the stark truth when it comes to energy use. The German government has urged its citizens to lower energy use. They require citizens to turn down their air conditioners and use less hot water. Let's end this segment by bringing up another point that is the following. What are the safest and cleanest sources of energy? Fossil fuels are the dirtiest and most dangerous energy sources, while nuclear and modern renewable energy sources are vastly safer and cleaner. The differences are huge. So it is quite hypocritical of Western governments to tell Iran to stop its civilian use of nuclear energy. That does it for this segment. Hope you found it useful.
When European countries began confronting Russia after Russia's special military operation against Ukraine, did they really know what they were getting themselves into? I mean, first of all, let's be clear, I'm not trying to justify the war or the death of civilians. But as the war dragged on, did the Europeans really want to continue down this path, one in which they are now facing things like lack of food, inflation, or high energy costs? Even now, do they want a political solution for the sake of at least not ruining their economies, let alone their citizens? Or are they following the U.S. diktats while risking a potential either Third World War or, worse yet, a nuclear catastrophe? These are key questions that the European officials need to deal with. We'll find out, hopefully sooner than later, what they decide. That does it for this edition of the program. It was great having you with us. From Mikhail Vitakli and team, looking forward to seeing you next week.
The ocean of dua.
Al Imam Al Hussein alayhi salam. Ziyaratan minni wa niyabatan an walidai.
Why did you leave us to fend for ourselves?
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyarat Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyarat al-Ashura. So stay with us.
وَلَعَنَ اللَّهُ آلَ زِيَادٍ وَآلَ مَرْوَانٍ
Brothers and sisters, we were discussing this part of Ziyaratul Ashura. وَلَعَنَ اللَّهُ آلَ زِيَادٍ وَآلَ مَرْوَانٍ. May Allah distance from His mercy the clan of Ziyad and the clan of Marwan. Now, we were talking about the rationale behind the validity of curse or distancing someone from Allah's mercy. I mean, praying to Allah to distance from His mercy those who deserve to be distanced. Don't forget, this is the true meaning of la'an. So la'an is a kind of prayer, is a kind of asking from the Almighty Allah. And that is why we have said many times that the word curse does not completely imply the meaning of la'an. And whenever we use a curse, this is just for the sake of translation and nothing else. Now, in the previous episodes, we discussed the validity of curse, since Allah curses those who torment Allah and the Holy Prophet in both this world as well as the hereafter. And in our traditions, it has been explicitly mentioned that tormenting Lady Fatima, Imam Ali alayhi salam, the relatives of Prophet, a believer, tormenting a warrior in the way of Allah, tormenting a neighbor, and also all the Muslims, is tantamount to tormenting Allah and the Holy Prophet. So, consequently, the tormenting ones are cursed by Allah in this world and hereafter. Based on what we have said so far, we realize that la'an is an expression of harmony with the All-Wise, the Merciful, with Allah Himself, because He is the one who curses those who deserve it. The Holy Quran says, كَيْفَ يَهْدِ اللَّهُ قَوْمًا كَفَرُوا بَعْدَ إِيمَانِهِمْ وَشَهِدُوا أَنَّ الرَّسُولَ حَقٌّ وَجَاءَهُمُ الْبَيِّنَاتِ. How shall Allah guide people who have disbelieved after their faith, and after bearing witness that the Apostle is true, and after manifest proofs have come to them? وَاللَّهُ لَا يَهْدِي الْقَوْمَ الظَّالِمِينَ. Allah does not guide the wrongdoing lot. أُولَٰئِكَ جَزَاؤُهُمْ أَنَّ عَلَيْهِمْ لَعْنَةُ اللَّهِ وَالْمَلَائِكَةِ وَالنَّاسِ أَجْمَعِينَ. Their punishment, their requital, is that there shall be upon them the curse of Allah, the angels, and all mankind.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. You will see it completely exemplifies. It clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is do not allow tyranny, do not allow evil doing, do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah, he appreciates Him, he understands His dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we're talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
So, this is the Holy Quran that mentions the word la'an. As the last verse to be discussed, for example, the Holy Quran says, قل هل أنبئكم بشر من ذلك مثوبة عند الله؟ من لعنه الله وغضب عليه وجعل منهم القردة والخنازير وعبد الطاغوت أولئك شر مكانا وأضل عن سواء السبيل. The verse says, shall I inform you concerning something worse than that as a requital from Allah? Those whom Allah has cursed and with whom He is wrathful and turned some of whom into apes and swine and worshippers of evil. Such are in a worse situation and more astray from the right path. So it is not only allowed in Islam to seek the divine expulsion for those who deserve such expulsion, it is also what the Almighty Allah does. Therefore, there are so many instances in the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt, in the verses of the Holy Quran, as well as the distinguished companions of the Holy Prophet, where la'n is perfectly expressed. Now let us have a look at some instances of using the word la'n in the traditions. For example, the Holy Prophet is reported to have said, إِذَا ذَهَرَتِ الْبِدَعُ فِي أُمَّتِي فَلْيُظْهِرِ الْعَالِمُ عِلْمَهُ فَمَنْ لَمْ يَفْعَلْ فَعَلَيْهِ لَعْنَةُ اللَّهِ. When innovations appear in my nation, the knowledgeable one must manifest his knowledge, and whosoever does not do so, then upon him be the curse of Allah. Or Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, who says, مَلْعُونٌ مَلْعُونٌ مَالٌ لَا يُزَكَّى. Cursed, cursed is that wealth that is not purified. Also, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is reported to have said, مَنْ قَالَ بِأَنَّنَا أَنْبِيَاءَ فَعَلَيْهِ لَعْنَةُ اللَّهِ. Whosoever says that we are divine prophets, may the curse of Allah be upon him. وَمَنْ شَكَّ فِي ذَلِكَ فَعَلَيْهِ لَعْنَةُ اللَّهِ. And so whosoever doubts about that, may the curse of Allah be upon him. These were some of the traditions from the Shi'i sources. We have also some traditions from Sunni sources, like Abu Bakr, who reports from the Holy Prophet sallallahu, مَلْعُونٌ مَنْ ضَارَّ مُؤْمِنًا أَوْ مَكَرَ بِهِ. Cursed is the one who harms a believer or deceives him. These were some of the instances of usage of the word la'an in our traditions. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكيك كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين
بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.